Okay, well, it's time once again for the Paris podcast. It's August 21st. Max and Stacy, the truth about markets and other various guises as we infiltrate the web and the subconscious, unconscious, and conscious minds of decision makers around the world, including ourselves. We make a decision every day whether or not to do this podcast, don't we?
Do we? It's always yes, isn't it? It's crazy.
Well, so far it's been yes. I say yes, that's right. We've decided yes again today. Yes, let's do this podcast. Why not? Pourquoi pas? Because it doesn't really cost anything, does it? I mean, that's the great thing about this new mass medium, whether it's YouTube or podcasting, is that we're not under commercial pressure to put out something that we don't want to put out. It's not like we're on some assembly line and making stuff that's ultimately crap. I mean, there's a need to put this out. There's a need to put into the public space some kind of truth.
Well, there was somebody from Germany yesterday who wrote on our blog that they were amazed that you and I could speak to each other for an hour a day.
Really?
That many married couples don't even have that.
That's right, because they're forced into it, aren't they? We decide to be together every day. We make that decision. Should we be together today? Don't we?
Do we? I didn't realize that, honey. I didn't realize you were experiencing that.
That's right. It's like American Indians, Every day you wake up. Should I hunt that bear? Should I build that teepee? It's nature. Nature guiding the daily experience instead of the humans trying to guide nature. This is where everything got screwed up, is when humans try to guide nature into doing the bidding of the human population. This is the beginning of ecological devastation. It kicked in earnest back in the Industrial Revolution when the toil and daily grind of each individual man at that time, some women, replaced by the machine.
But we're in Paris, honey.
Mm.
And who is on the front page of every paper today? French paper.
That woman.
Ségolène Royal.
Yeah.
The papers are saying Ségomania erupts as 4,000 people crushed into a tiny Burgundian village to witness the unofficial launch of her presidential campaign. Three people were injured in the crush.
Oh my God.
And this was in a town called Frangy. And the mayor says that the town has seen its first riot as people crush in to see Ségo. Polls this weekend show that she would beat Sarko 55 to 42%.
Right. Sarko is the heir to Chirac.
Wait, Sarkozy, Nicolas Sarkozy.
Yeah, exactly. He's on the right. Ségolène is on the left. She says she's an heir to François Mitterrand.
Yes.
It's her political mentor.
And they're saying not since Mitterrand has there been such a popular frenzy for any potential leader.
Well, yeah, she was causing quite a stir just a week ago because some paparazzis caught her in her bikini. And,
Max has the poster in his office.
Yeah, we got that photo up on the wall, along with, pictures of, I don't know. What else we got up there? Photos of
I have a
a
picture.
camembert. Big camembert. What else going on?
Exactly. Well, let's talk about that story I was mentioning about the stupid Brits. This is a headline in the Independent today. The CBI, the Confederation of Business and Industry in the UK, warns that poorly educated staff is costing business £10 billion a year. That's almost $20 billion.
Yeah.
Apparently, one in three businesses is being forced to send their staff for remedial lessons in basic literacy and numeracy because schools have failed to teach them to read, write, or add up properly.
All right.
But they don't mention that because they themselves have failed to pay their taxes. And also, business has lost faith in GCSEs and A levels. They don't believe the scores anymore because they're receiving people who had high marks and high pass rates, and they can't even read or write.
Right. Well, you have in the UK something you have in the US too, which is grade inflation, where the number of A's given out keeps going up every year. particularly in the UK, though, this is a problem because it's debasing the intelligence quotients of that country, which then is feeding into the economy and making the UK corporation less competitive because they have to start schools themselves. They have to pay for schools to have adequate employees, people who can work at it. Now, what was the company in the U.S. that had to set up their own school? Boeing.
Boeing and Raytheon. But this is a great way for people to understand what happens with price inflation in housing market, for example, or money inflation just generally, is the inflation does debase it. Politicians kind of use this inflation as a way to hollow out in the meantime and basically steal from you.
Yeah.
They steal your intelligence with a great inflation without having to put any money into the system. And the same thing with they let you feel good by inflating the price of your house. But in the meantime, they're sending all the industry and your future wealth. They're hollowing out the wealth of the country and sending it abroad.
Yeah. Well, as education has been taken over by private enterprise, there's an incentive to give out more A's because they want to make students they want to entice students to borrow money from the bank to go to that university and to get reaffirmation that they made a good decision by borrowing money, by getting an A. So it's a collusion, really, between the private industry running the schools and banks that are making the loans to these students, who are then enticed into going to these schools basically carrying these huge debt loads because they're being awarded A's. Now, if you went to the school and you borrowed a bunch of money and you ended up graduating with a B, you would be less inclined to pay off that loan, or you wouldn't get that loan to begin with. So this is why there's this grade inflation, and of course it debases the value of that A. And what happens is these students come out of the universities and they find themselves unable to secure jobs that pay enough to pay off their loans, or they end up working in these government jobs where the pay is higher, but, you know, the tacit agreement there is that you have to vote the way we say you vote. Obviously, in America, the Bush's job creation over the past 5 years has been mostly in the government sector, where people are making more money than in the non-government sector, but they're also a captive audience. They end up voting heavily toward their employer, which is the U.S. government. And so this helps them pay off the loans and gives them validation that they're worth an A. And then you have the media leaning right, which tells them that if they get an A and they work for the government, then God loves them. So they have further validation. And it's just a game of turning people away from any kind of reasonable expectation of what a life lived might offer toward this sense of divine entitlement. So you have a whole population of godly lemmings with crowns on that are jumping off the cliff instead of just lemmings without a crown on. So, you know, in the U.S., this is what we have now. We've got millions and millions of divinely inspired lemmings who are all jumping off the cliff simultaneously into the mosh pit of insolvency and bankruptcy thanks to the easy money that's been given to them from the banks, who tell them to go to the school and get the big A for God. And, you know, it's a huge negative cycle based on the positive feedback loop of lower expectations.
Well, speaking of lemmings, this is a big story that a mob forced two Muslim men off a plane on a flight from Malaga back to Britain. And here is one of the leaders of the group of Brits that forced these guys off the plane before it would take off, Heath Schofield. He said, "Well, we were coming back to Britain with a load of people in flip-flops and shorts, but these two men were wearing jumpers and leather jackets."
Mm-hmm. So they threw them off the plane.
So they threw them off the plane.
Yeah, well, it's also reminiscent of the Salem witch trials in America.
Mm-hmm.
You have a mob, the mob mentality. Somebody's not like the mob, therefore they're a dangerous element to the mob. And they end up stoning or putting on trial the aberrant element that's not exactly like themselves, not non-homogenized version of themselves. And, you know, the thing about this mob mentality and mass psychological propaganda war that's going on is that you need people to defer to the crowd. Crowd mentality or mob mentality. You know, there's that book that came out last year, The Wisdom of Crowds, which tries to point out that the crowds are smarter than the individual and any individual in the crowd. They point to examples of this where the mob or the crowd has acted in a smarter way than the individual might act. And this is only true half the time. The other half the time, the mob is stupider than the individual. As you get into mob panic, mob psychology, and there's another book that came out during a long time ago in America called
The Stupidity of Crowds.
Well, so. Yeah, it's called the shit. I can't remember the name of this thing. I don't know. I'll think of it in a second. I'll think of it. But so this idea only works half the time, really. So again, it takes some kind of balance to goes back to the Siddhartha, really. You know, there needs to be some kind of balance. In the U.S., you just have this incredible swing back and forth, and it exhausts people to the point where they just drop dead from exhaustion trying to keep up with the swings and in the public sentiment. There's no underlying sense of identity other than I'm being tossed around like a ball at a fun fair, as Frank Rich points out over the weekend in the New York Times. And yet there's a graphic of a roller coaster and people asleep on the roller coaster. You know, in America, they've been jerked around so often for the past 5 years, being scared to death every time it's politically convenient for the ruling class, that they're exhausted. They can't respond to any more of these fake scares anymore, these code alerts. And it's politically expedient for the people in government to provide cover while they pass laws that undermine the rights of the citizens and enhance the rights of the corporations. But ultimately, as we're seeing now, there's a diminishing returns kick in. So the people who, for example, who you would expect to be supporting the economy, they can't take the debts on anymore, so they're not supporting the private universities. They can't take the consumers are having difficulty taking on debts to shop at Walmart. You know, Walmart came in with the first quarterly down earnings report in 10 years. So this is in large part because the Walmart customer has been discounted to death, I would say. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a good story about Walmart by Floyd Norris in today's New York Times. Popular Delusions in the Madness of Crowds.
That's the book. Okay, I know that one.
Yeah, that's the book. This is the opposite of The Wisdom of Crowds. See, it's only half the time the crowds are smart, half the time the crowds are stupid. To try to make these blanket statements, as you find in America all the time, it's exhausting and it's intellectually shallow. It just leads to a nation of these hysterical divine lemmings, and the rest of the world is frankly quite sick of it. And this is why you find 95% of the world that's not American happy not to be American.
Well, you see this evidence actually in the reactions to this latest so-called terror scare with this whole transatlantic so-called terror plot, is that half the crowd is in a panic and half is asleep.
Mm-hmm.
So one of them is right, one of them is wrong.
They're both wrong. The point is that this is another point of irritation in the UK, because in the UK they respond to these bomb threats in a measured way. If you look at the history of the IRA and the bombs of the IRA in London, etc., the UK government responded in a measured way. And there was concern and there was a way to react to it. But they weren't fear-mongering using the BBC. The BBC would never get on TV and flame hysteria as a way to deal with an IRA bomb. They would be informative and people would understand what's going on, and they would make the appropriate, you know, take the appropriate actions. So just recently now, what's happening is in the UK, they have the U.S. Embassy. And America wants to close traffic around the U.S. Embassy in London. and they don't want any traffic getting anywhere near the U.S. Embassy. And the local government in the U.K. is saying, we're not going to allow for that. We already have barricades in front of the U.S. Embassy. You know, if you can't conduct yourself in a adult-like manner in the world politics, then get the hell out of London. That's the message. We're not going to transform our entire city by barricading a whole block because you, America, is belligerently antagonizing 95% of the world population by being non-competitive, psychophantic lunatics. We're not going to transform our city for you. So either you change your behavior or get out of London. So there's a conflict now. And Tony Blair is actually now having to cop to the fact that he was set up by the Bush administration and made to look the fool and to act the fool. And just this past week, many MPs in London agree with John Prescott that, in fact, Bush's policies are crap. Now, this is probably going to be the single greatest reason why Blair has to step down from office, is that he aligned himself with Bush, and now he's a huge political casualty of the of Blair supporters because he allowed himself to be mesmerized by Bush, who, as is becoming clearer by the day, is actually not just inarticulate and lacks a certain imaginative spark. He is actually dictionary-grade stupid.
Yes. Well, actually, a senior Downing Street source this weekend leaked Blair's private thoughts that he was wrong to have trusted somebody with such low intelligence, to have faith in somebody with such low intelligence. So this seems to be a theme, because remember last week, MSNBC did that news item of, is George Bush an idiot?
Mm-hmm.
So this seems to be the theme of the last week or two.
Well, he's 0-3 in his warmongering. You know, he lost Afghanistan, lost Iraq, Israel lost in Lebanon. And they failed to stop democratic uprisings in Bolivia and Venezuela. And so even if you're one of these red-blooded American, you know, gun-toting, army-supporting, marine-saluting kind of reactionaries, you got to be upset that your commander-in-chief keeps losing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these guys, I would imagine, at some point would want to win something. Remember, they lost in Vietnam. This caused tremendous anxiety in the Pentagon. Reagan came in. And they set up some, you know, these little wars, like, what, with Margaret Thatcher, didn't she invaded Grenada?
No, Reagan did. Margaret Thatcher hit him over the head with a purse saying, you idiot, there's only 100,000 people there.
Right, well, this was a way to repair the PR image of the military, that we could, quote, win one.
Yeah.
You see, so they were building up the military's kind of self-respect because they had lost confidence in themselves. And then Bush comes in and you lose three in a row. This is the worst period of military defeat in American history. Has America ever had a worse period of military defeat? I don't know. I mean, North Korea was basically, the Korean War was kind of a draw. I mean, Vietnam was clearly a big loser. It lost 58,000 men. But as far as actually engaging in a multiplicity of conflicts and losing, I don't know if America's ever lost three straight. I mean, that's three strikes, you're out, as far as I know. You know, America prides itself on the, currying favor with mamby-pamby, living, liver-lily schmucks. I mean, Bush clearly is a big loser.
I think that what the solution is that we need more women in here to run these countries, because what is any war is propaganda, but particularly a terror war. It's about who's winning the hearts and minds of the opinion of the people of the world, the citizens of the world.
Mm.
And now Margaret Thatcher dealt with it best when the IRA blew away, killed some of her cabinet members, nearly killed her. She literally just got up, called Marks and Spencers, asked them to send over more clothes, walked across the street and went and gave her speech that she was supposed to do. And this is how you respond to teenage boys who are destructive and violent. You just ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you bend down and start smacking them in the face, all the people walking by say, oh, what a bad mother. Oh, she's a violent mother. You know,
right.
You just ignore them and everybody agrees. Oh, look at that kid throwing a tantrum on the ground. That's the way Bush should respond. They should just ignore them.
Yeah, well, I'd love to have some women rise up politically in America. I mean,
I thought you were going to say you would love to have some women smack you in the face.
Well, yeah, maybe that too, but, you know, Hillary Clinton is, I think, too far corrupted, so Condi Rice is too far corrupted. There's no, see, Sangoline Royale. Sangoline Royale. I mean, you get the point, you get the feeling she's a woman. She's not compromising her femininity and womanhood to make it in politics. I mean, she's... this is something that I would love to see in the U.S., but, you know, the U.S. is very oppressive. You know, it's women are abused in the U.S. You know, they're trying to take away what little rights that women have in the U.S. They're taking away reproductive rights, and you know, women are treated like second-class citizens in America. The ones who, quote-unquote, get ahead are ones who allow themselves to be, you know, having to act like men. You know, mm-hmm. they have to dress like men, pretend like they're men. They're not getting ahead while keeping their womanhood intact, unfortunately. And that's just a very immature way to go about doing things, and at least in this country, in France. You know, women can... It's not an issue, I would think. It wouldn't have to be an issue. But the U.S. is a very immature country. It's only been around for 200 years, which on compared to the other countries out there, it means it's going through the terrible twos. You know, two-year-olds are notoriously difficult to handle because they can't make the transition from being coddled all day long to having to, you know, go potty and make sure they don't, you know, shit in their diapers. And America's having this trouble. I mean, it's basically soiling itself all over the place and pooing everywhere in the world, and it doesn't want to pick up after itself. And the rest of the world is saying, look, you have to grow up now, America. We're not going to clean up your mess all the time. And there's been too much of this nonsense about how America saved the world in World War II and how the world owes America some kind of debt. That's just completely ridiculous. I mean, France bailed out America during the Revolutionary War. Without France, there would be no America, for one thing. Second of all, America, after World War II, set up this global U.S. dollar hegemony that they've been milking the world economy for 60 years and getting a free ride. You know, it's been an enabler, actually. It's probably the worst thing that happened is that America had such a clear-cut victory in World War II because it set themselves up for the 60-year free ride on the rest of the world economy, just milking every single transaction now based in dollars. So 60% of all transactions in the world are U.S. dollar-based. So part of the growing up process is that the rest of the world are developing other currencies. There's a new Asian currency that'll be a consolidated currency similar to what happened in the euro. There's the euro, of course. You're getting different exchanges set up, trading oil in different currencies. And so America's being weaned off the breast milk of the World War II win. And I wish it happened 20 years ago, 30 years ago, because America would have already been through this difficult transitional phase from infant to baby, and or from baby to infant. And we wouldn't have to watch a great country being ridiculed every day by everyone all over the world for being led by a shameless adolescent, pimple popping, kind of half drunk, intellectually comatose jackass. And in France, you have, for example, the New York Times is trying to lecture France today in the editorial section, trying to say that France is irresponsible for sending only 200 additional peacekeepers to Lebanon. Well, look, you know, New York Times, France is not stupid, okay? They've been around for a long, long time, and they know how the game of war is played. And
well, I think it's clear that America needs to grow up. They said they lectured France when France refused to clean up after America's mess in Iraq. Mm. Now they're lecturing them. You know, France, clean up our mess in Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
Take off your diapers, America. You
have to clean up your own mess. It says America, which is badly overstretched in Iraq, has made it clear it won't send troops to Lebanon.
Well, because Lebanon wouldn't have you there, you idiots.
Yeah. And the rest of the world knows that America's overstretched. And the rest of the world has businesses they want to compete too, you know. France has car companies too. France has industry, agricultural industry, intellectual property industry. They'd like to compete too. If America's going to take itself out of the game by spending all of its resources on chasing, who knows what, by spending $200 billion by some estimates, up to $1 trillion by others, dollars in Iraq, going down a rabbit hole, the rest of the world's still, go ahead. You know, we'll fill in the competitive gap. We have no problem doing business with the whole Arab world. You know, meanwhile, one of the richest Arab guys in the world, Prince Ali Wad in Saudi Arabia, is taking his company public in Saudi Arabia. It's a $7 billion deal. He'll be a fresh billionaire. He'll probably be topping the league tables with the multi-billionaires because the U.S. is taking itself out of the game.
He's already the fifth richest person in the world.
He's going to jump up to number one soon.
But also, France, the French people are very famous for knowing a con straight away. Mm. And any of these so-called war zones and disaster areas are absolute American cons of the likes of Bechtel, Halliburton, Casey, and Titan. They're just money traps for private contractors. They create a mess, whether it's in Iraq, Afghanistan, or Lebanon, or New Orleans. And they say, help us, send us your money, send us your aid money. We'll rebuild. Hmm. And then, of course, they don't. They do a runner.
Yeah, I mean, the argument the New York Times sets up here is so pathetic. The end of the editorial, they say that a second-tier power can sidestep difficult choices. Superpowers cannot. And they begin this by saying if France wants to be a superpower, they have to step up and make, the tough decisions. And, the thing is that what the New York Times doesn't understand is that we're no longer in an age of superpowers and secondary powers. We're in the open source network age, where a small network like Al-Qaeda can have as much power now as any country or any organization or any corporation. It's not to say that Al-Qaeda is good or bad. It's just to say that networks and the power of the networks, and if you want to look at the mathematical rationale, look at Robert Metcalfe's law of the network, which states that the influence or power or the economics of surplus, the network grows by a square root of each additional node. So you have, the classic example of one fax machine is worthless, two fax machines have value, three fax machines have the square root of the additional node of that fax machine to giving the network some power in ad infinitum until you have this network effect and the economics of things like suddenly YouTube is now considered to be one of the most influential political forces in the world today. 24 months ago, there was no YouTube. You don't get a YouTube by going through this process of mental thought processes of creating these hierarchies and these pyramids of power. It's completely doesn't work. It's absurd. France is, by stepping away from America's doo-doo, is going to continue to be a powerful force. America is on the verge of losing most of its influence and power around the world, and most of the world is applauding that because America, after all, is a contributing factor with arms sales to most of the world's instability, and because of the toxic exhaust from the biggest corporations, it's the worst ecological offender. So, seriously, you have to ask yourself, if the American influence in the world dropped by 90%, is this not a better world that we would live in? Of course the answer is yes. Of course, of course, of course. Anyone who debates that is not prepared to compete in this 21st century. You're going to cling on to a sinking ship. But of course, in every paradigm shift, there are winners and losers. And, America is, like every country before it, had its day. And now it's going down the backside, the back nine of its empire, of its day. I mean, so what? Who cares? I mean, what's the big deal? There are other. I don't see why everyone's so sentimentally attached to this country, America. What's the big attraction? I don't get it. Why do people think so much of this country? What is the big attraction? What do they have there that's so exciting, so good? I don't get it. I mean, the European lifestyle is better. In America, I just read, for example, that Americans are giving up even more of their vacation days.
Yeah, 25% of private workers at private corporations get zero holiday days a year.
Well, if your economy is such where you don't get any days off,
that's a slave.
And it's getting worse. Is that an economy that you should be emulating and supporting? You're stupid. Here in the Europe, all the productivity gains are reinvested into leisure, more days off. You know, the productivity in Europe and the productivity in America is exactly the same. The Americans are not more productive. They work more hours, but then they reinvest their gains into consumption, which is creating ecological devastation. In Europe, they reinvest their productivity into leisure, which is ecologically less destructive. So, again, Americans are fucked up in the head, if I can use that phrase.
Actually, the productivity numbers are higher in France than they are in America on an hourly basis, much higher. And America has a higher productivity rate on a yearly basis just because they have to work much, much longer in order to achieve the same productivity.
Well, again, you know, it's just why do we care if the American economy drops and kind of fades from the world stage? What do we care? Why? What's the big deal? From based on what? What's the attraction?
I can't think of one.
I'm curious what you, the listener, would think. You tell me why we should be, why we should care.
It's only a nostalgic thing. I think most of the people who think that will have either not been to America or only been to, say, New England. And they have this nostalgic thing of Americans coming here and arriving after World War II and freeing them from helping them fight the Nazis. So it has that residue effect of the goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
And it has all that 60s and 70s great filmmakers and great Hollywood product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I just have trouble. Yeah. Well, look at this. It's a story about Walmart. I mean, you know, it's interesting here. Floyd Norris is talking about Walmart. And it's become a flashpoint in U.S. political debate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Joe Biden is attacking Walmart as being a force for a negative force in the U.S. economy. And Floyd Norris here is trying to defend Walmart in today's paper. But he makes some very he repeats some points that you hear often, which are completely wrong. For example, here he says that Walmart's success reflects its ability to charge less for a wide range of goods. That arguably has reduced inflation and made the economy more efficient. Now, that's just basically wrong. That's not correct. That's not even near to being correct. The ability of Walmart to charge less is the result of their outsourcing production to China due to the globalization.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, due to the same forces of globalization, you've got Chinese competing with American for jobs and pressuring salaries in America down. So salaries are going down in America faster than the savings that these people glean from shopping at Walmart. So salaries are down in America, and this leads to a phenomenon in America of people borrowing from their house to afford consuming at Walmart. Which is these loans are then passed off into the finance market as asset-backed structured finance or, you know, mortgage collateralized bonds, which are traded amongst various banks around the world. And to account for the often missed trade and losses, these same banks are in the process of issuing ever greater tranches of various derivatives based on these bonds, which net-net at the end of the day adds to inflation. It doesn't subtract to inflation. So if you connect all the dots, Walmart's, by charging less, increases inflation.
Exactly. Well, plus they're creating inflation through the commodities market, because by sending jobs and creating jobs in China, they're creating demand for raw materials, which is driving up the price of oil, lead, copper, wood, agricultural products, mm-hmm. sugar. All of this is being driven by the employees of China being able to afford things like cars and IKEA furniture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a huge sinkhole, you know, in the U.S. economy. It says many people higher up on the income scales find Walmart prices irresistible. Well, you know, as it drags more people from the middle class into the lower class, by shopping at Walmart, which is giving China the ability to pressure those people's salaries down, it increases the incidence of the 9/11s and 7/7s. You're creating the armed wing of the middle class in response to having the middle class destroyed by Walmart.
Yeah.
So Walmart is the single most greatest contributor to so-called terrorist acts, because it's the biggest employer in America. America is the biggest contributor to the forces, economically speaking, that are squeezing the middle class out of existence. And this is leading to middle class guys around the world in, blowing things up. So Walmart is responsible directly. And
well, exactly, because it's part, like you said, it's middle class guys, it's young men. You need them to be chopping down trees or building roads or digging things. Like they need to do physical work, not just stand at Walmart with a service industry job.
Mm-hmm. No, it's like saying a drug addict, when they're sticking the needle in their vein, is quote unquote working. Yeah, that's not a job. Drug addiction is not a job, even though it makes, you know, Afghani opium farmers a few shekels.
Exactly.
It doesn't mean that, you could conceive it as a job in a healthy economy. Now, and then, of course, he ends up with this canard of the most dangerous of all, which is that, the guy who runs Walmart now, Lee, General Lee.
General Lee? Lee Scott.
Lee Scott. He's saying that he's aware of the problem. He wants to work with politicians to see what he can do to make the situation better.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
And so Floyd Norris is buying into this, and he says that critics should work with Walmart because Walmart's aware of the problem, and they should all work together. Lee said that the soaring cost of healthcare in America cannot be sustained over the long term by any business that offers health benefits to employees. And every day that we do not work together to solve this challenge is a day that our country becomes less competitive in the global economy. Okay, so he's pointing out the fact that his company is destroying American society and the American economy. And that one of the answers is that he's asking people to help him work through the problem because he himself is not identifying himself with the problem. Ipso facto, we're back to the Norman Bates syndrome, where he kills people with his economic model, and then he looks in the mirror and asks his mirror image, who did it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And Floyd Norris buys into this poppycock by saying, we need to work with business. I mean, they're asking for our help. Look, Floyd, they're not asking for our help. They are, I mean, if it's just like any serial killer or deranged psychopathic killer, they're not psychologically stable, are they, Floyd Norris? You need to go to Lee Scott and to sit down with him and discuss how Walmart is killing people and how to, change the situation. You're sitting down with basically, who is the guy from Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal Lecter. You want to sit down with Hannibal Lecter and discuss, how to cook fava beans, with somebody's liver? I mean, you're just leading your poor readers into the slaughter, Floyd. I hate to say it. I've been reading you for years now, and most of the time your columns show that somebody is giving you some money somewhere under the table because you're not doing anything for the people who read your columns except setting them up for getting devastated, but... good luck with that, Floyd.
Well, with that, we got an email.
Yeah.
From another person in Germany.
Oh, yeah.
Carl from Germany.
Oh, yeah.
And he says, although I am from Germany and we were most of the time out of humor, thanks to Angela and many others, I like your excessive way you make nasty remarks about the big and important assholes and rapists of the planet and its human and non-human inhabitants.
Yeah.
And he sends us to a really cool, he gave us a link to a really cool site called blackshoals.net.
Yeah.
Now this is something we wish we had created.
Blackshoals.net?
It's a stock market planetarium.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's apparently a living sort of exhibition in Copenhagen,
mm-hmm.
in which all of the stars are matched with a specific stock trading mm-hmm. on some world exchange, and they have all the world exchanges tied into these stars, and they fluctuate and get bigger and smaller with the market cap of the company.
Right.
Plus, there are also living creatures out there in outer space that feed or die off of these stars.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds really interesting.
Yeah, we got to go see this thing.
Yeah.
Where is it?
In Copenhagen.
Is it a permanent installation or is it a temporary installation?
I'm not sure. I'll have to check in on that.
Maybe we should have some kind of Karma Bank field trip.
To Copenhagen and
see. Yeah, we want to go to Copenhagen anyway. Is anyone in Copenhagen that can tell us where we can get a... where should we stay in Copenhagen? Send us an email, karmabank@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Okay, honey. Now, here's an interesting story from the Financial Times. It's called Cash Cashed as Fears Grow. Now, during the last 10 years, you've had an incredible explosion of asset-backed securities,
mm-hmm.
like mortgages,
yep.
repackaged and sold. And you also have the growth of the derivative industry. And you've got this incredible $400 trillion asset bond market, basically. Now, what's happening is that the $400 trillion derivative markets are melting. You know, like the polar ice caps are melting. So money managers and hedge fund managers and bankers and corporations are moving into cash.
Mm.
And this is why I think that Ben Bernanke and the world's central bankers are not through raising interest rates. Because this is an incredible source of money creation and inflation. So all that money evaporated into the clouds of the derivative-osphere, and now it's raining cash at this point. So hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars, are trickling their way back into the economy, and that's highly inflationary. And the Federal Reserve Bank and these other banks are raising interest rates, or they say they're going to stop raising interest rates because they're not looking at those numbers in, to gauge whether or not they should be raising or lowering rates. You know, what they look at are the prices of stuff. But the prices of stuff and the indexes that are tied to the prices of stuff are been hedonically adjusted for years and massaged, and they give a very incomplete picture of the actual inflation, which is what's the money supply number. So I think that the rate at which the derivative markets are going to melt is going to far exceed anyone's ability to stay ahead of it by raising interest rates. So interest rates can continue to go up. Money can continue to flood the system, and commodity prices can continue to go higher because it becomes a refuge during periods of massive money floods.
Mm-hmm.
The money flood, 40 days and 40 nights of massive money floods. There needs to be a Noah's Ark built out of commodities. What is Noah's Ark? Noah was a commodity trader. And on his ark, he kept wheat, diamonds, gold, silver, cocoa, rice.
Pork
bellies. And as the 40 days and 40 nights of massive liquidity flooded the globe and washed out all of the fiat currencies, only Noah was left in his ark of commodities. That's what we're talking about, biblical. Those Christian evangelicals should orient themselves toward this particular story if they want to get more biblical.
Start buying pork bellies.
Start buying pork bellies. What's going on with Israel? Israel warns of more raids in Lebanon. So I thought they established a ceasefire. Doesn't matter, I guess.
They claim it's to stem arms flow, but it's actually to kidnap some more people. They want to kidnap the spiritual leaders of Hezbollah.
Well, Israel is dragging itself and America and the UK down into the economic gutter. If America, you see... America, the smartest thing America could do for its economy is to cut ties to Israel. That would be the smart thing to do. I mean, if you've got a portfolio of stocks, you know, you have to sell your losers. This is the discipline of any portfolio manager. Sell your losers quick. Let your winners ride. And Israel is a loser. The American portfolio managers, that is the politicians in Washington, need to cut their losses. Get out of Israel now. Or have that one little picture of a country destroy your entire portfolio. You know, this is why money is leaving the U.S. dollar. Well, you know, what's happening in this part of the newspaper? This is the Financial Times fund management section.
Oh, wow. That sounds like fun.
Yeah. It's every Monday they have this section. The renewable energy sector goes mainstream. Yeah, okay. That's good. I saw something actually that, do you know that AIG scandal, the insurance company?
Yep. Warren Buffett's company.
Well, Warren Buffett, it's a friend of Warren Buffett. It turns out that they were looking more and more like they were using Warren Buffett's company to do some money accounting laundering, which would explain why Warren Buffett got a sweetheart deal to invest in Israel recently.
Wow.
So it looks like Warren Buffett's going to be dragged into this AIG-Israel conflict. You know that Warren Buffett's the largest heir of Coca-Cola, and he just put it at $4 billion in Israel. So effectively, Warren Buffett's fighting Hezbollah.